everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with our friend Ray Allen. Ray is producing and engineering our show today on the other side of the glass. Together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Monday, February 22nd, 2016. Today, the birthday of the first president of the United States. Today is the day that we used to honor George Washington, Bruce Ash, with a special holiday.
Yeah, you know, the tone of presidential politics in both political parties is a lot different than the stature of the great George Washington. Mm. You look at the praise and the admiration that people continue to this day, except for a couple who, you know, want to deny him that honor for whatever sort of twisted political correctness reason that they might have. But George Washington, you know, certainly when you're looking at the greatest of the great in the history of our republic, certainly he's there.
That's Bruce Ash. We'll hear from him in a few moments with our Monday political face-off with Paul Eckerstrom. In what will be a very interesting half hour, the first half hour, as well as the second, Dr. William Hartman will join us. If you've ever wondered about how Tucson became the astronomy capital of North America and perhaps the world, we'll have some fascinating insight for you from one of America's brightest lights, Dr. Bill Hartman. The Buckmaster Show live line number 790-2040 for your calls and comments. And if you have some suggestions as well, we also invite you to become a friend of the Buckmaster Show. In addition, you can follow us on Twitter at Buckmaster Show. The Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge. Moe and his family, Mr. Moe Gaul, G-A-U-L, and family have been at it a long time doing framing in this community, and they are someone you can certainly trust with all of your framing needs. And big jobs, too. Bruce Ash took a huge Navajo textile in there, and you're very pleased.
Did a fabulous job. It looks so great up on the high wall in our house. Geez, everybody comments.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Thank you, Moe, for your support. Moe loves politics, and that's what we talk here on the Monday Political Face-Off. Bruce Ash is the national committeeman, has been for 2 years in Arizona, one of two Republican national committeemen. There's a woman and a man.
Yeah, actually, since it's my third term.
Oh, third term.
I've been at this since 2007. You think I get it right by now? You know, we need to win this election in 2016. I want to go out a winner.
And you are running against a former state senator, the infamous
Senator Russell Pierce. And actually, Bill, let me just say this for the record: Russell is a friend of mine. We have collaborated on many projects before. In fact, Senator Pierce, about 3 years ago, helped me with an RNC resolution dealing with illegal immigration and a means to legalize people who are here in this country so they could work, without being underground. He is a great man. We're running against one another, but I still respect him a great deal, and I'm working very hard at it. Last week I did an event up in Saddlebrook. Saturday morning I was on the road at O'Dark 30 to go up to Cave Creek for an event there with the Citizens Business League at the Pioneer Way Museum up in Cave Creek, and then came down for what was a very, very great event that the Green Valley Republican Club had at Quail Creek with Tonto Peronto, who was one of the heroes of the 13 hours at Benghazi. Quite a revealing talk he gave Saturday afternoon.
Well, while we're waiting for your face-off mate to come in, that would be Paul Eckerstrom, a well-known Tucson Democratic Party activist, former local and state chair of the party. Paul's tied up in traffic. Let's take a call from Tom. Tom, you're up on the face-off. Go ahead.
Bruce, do you think that Trump at this point can still be denied the Republican nomination?
Well, that's a great question, Tom. I'm not here to deny him or to give him that nomination. It's the voters who are going to make that decision. You know, Trump seems to have a ceiling at about 30 or 35%, somewhere in that range, where he appears to be stuck at in terms of his overall vote-getting popularity. We're only three contests in to a 56-contest primary schedule, Tom. We will decide about 64% of our delegates between the 1st of February and the end of March. And up until March 15th, Tom, the way that the Republican rules are set up, all of the contests, except for the one that we had Saturday in South Carolina, are proportional. There's no winner-take-all contest in the Republican Party except for the contest that we had last week. So, you know, depending upon how things shake out, we might see, you know, Mr. Carson or Mr. Kasich, you know, make certain decisions over the next few days or so. Certainly by the time we have the Nevada caucuses, I suspect they'll make decisions on whether they will or whether they can move forward. But Mr. Bush getting out of the race just last week, you know, has already had some profound impact on the future of the primaries, I think.
Paul Eckerstrom joining us now. Paul, how are you? I know good. You were caught in traffic.
Yep, I was.
So thank you for coming in. I do want, speaking of Trump, and I was going to get to this a little bit later in the face-off, but Tom has actually brought it up now. I'm going to read just the first paragraph from this Washington Post editorial, which is all over social media. It's basically titled, "The Moment of Truth, We Must Stop Trump." It's written by Danielle Allen. She's a contributing columnist for the Washington Post. She's a political theorist at Harvard University. She says, like any number of us raised in the late 20th century, I have spent my life perplexed about exactly how Hitler could have come to power in Germany. Watching Donald Trump's rise, I now understand. Leave aside whether a direct comparison of Trump to Hitler is accurate. That's not my point. My point, rather, is about how a demagogic opportunist can exploit a divided country. Paul Eckerstrom.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of out of a Machiavellian / Goebbels playbook in terms of using fear and blame small groups of people, other groups of people, the other. In this case, it would be, you know, illegal immigrants, kind of tap into an anger that's felt by a voting public, and direct that anger, I think, inappropriately by using fear and anger to get those votes. And you know, Trump has his proposals, but they're not very detailed in terms of policy or issues, and some of them I think are reckless and take advantage of people's fears. I just would hope that people, when they actually finally decide to sit down and really vote for people, that they don't let those type of emotions creep in and actually help make their decisions. They should make it as rationally as possible. It's not easy to do because we're emotional beings. But that article is accurate in that respect. I'm not saying that I don't think Trump is going to be Hitler. I don't think he's going to do horrible war crimes and things like that. But he is gaining his momentum based on using fear and anger and tapping into it. And I think that's not the way we should be selecting our presidents.
Bruce?
Well, I'm glad that Paul walked back the Hitler connection. There are, however, a lot of similarities between Mr. Trump and President Obama in terms of the extra constitutional means to which both have, in practice, Mr. Obama, and in theory, Mr. Trump, would handle the job if they were if Trump was president of the United States. There are a considerable number of Republicans who are concerned that the extra constitutional means that President Obama has governed by over the past several years might be picked up by by a Republican president. Somebody on this radio station just Saturday afternoon, who was with the Federalist Society, said that, you know, sometimes we have to be less focused on what the outcome is and more on the process. And we all want good outcomes to political issues and to social issues and so on. But we do have a constitution. It's a messy document. It's somewhat difficult to abide by, but the founding fathers of this country determined how we would run our government. And I think it's important that whoever our nominee is, whether it's somebody who's a Democrat or somebody who's a Republican, we follow the Constitution, we follow the rules, and we make sure that all citizens are treated the right way. I was very concerned when a friend of mine, Pete Ricketts, who happens to be the governor of Nebraska, was in effect threatened. Pete and his brother Tom were threatened by Donald Trump because they don't support him. And his comment publicly was, you know, they have lots of secrets, and if they don't watch it, these secrets might just come out.
Oh boy,
this is a great family who throughout the Midwest has done incredible works of charity and development for communities wherever they're at, whether it's in Nebraska or in Illinois.
I hope we're not going back to the days of the House that's Committee on Un-American Activities.
Yeah, you know, in terms of Bruce's argument about extra constitutional actions, that's not what this article is about. And I would say that those can be resolved by the U.S. Supreme Court. There's three branches of government. The Obama administration will follow whatever the Supreme Court says on any of those issues. But when we talk about this, it is emotion. It's like waving the flag. I'm going to make America great again. Basically saying nothing but that, and then on top of that, blaming everybody's problems on other foreign countries or other people who are not like us, Muslims or people from Mexico, and you know, it's not good for our body politic to have that type of angst in it, and it's not the way you pick. We should pick our leaders. I mean, that's how Hitler did rise to power. And I think Donald Trump, unfortunately, is doing the similar type of politics, which I don't think is the way you should pick a president. You got to think rationally about what do they represent, how are they going to perform in a job, and make those decisions. People are emotional, but anger and fear, especially, we should not be playing on to try to get elected.
Fear is what Barack Obama played on in 2008.
No, he didn't. Where did that come from, Bruce?
All right, we're going to take a break right here. 12:17, Buckmaster on a Monday. It's the Monday Political Face-Off brought to you by Moe's Gallery. Find framing and their gallery. Back right after this. The Regional Transportation Authority is funding new sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bike lanes across the region to enhance our regional mobility and safety. The 20-year RTA plan also includes roadway improvement projects and transit service enhancements to get you where you want to go. The RTA continues to deliver its promise to you to make our region safer and more accessible. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.? Well,
flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. Dive into the culture section with the latest on the arts. Book reviews from Rebecca Guthrie. What movies are hot or not from Bob Garber. Eric Peters brings his unique point of view with his auto reviews. Check out where you could vacation regardless of the season. It is culture news from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Business owners and managers, upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona is setting the standard for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. Being accredited with BBB means that your business holds the same high standards and consumers can count on you to keep your word. Hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans use our website every month. Make sure they find your business. Call us today to discuss the many benefits of BBB accreditation at 888-6161 or go to our website at bbb.org/Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Welcome back to the Monday Political Face-Off. Paul Eckerstrom seated to the left of me, Bruce Ash to the right, and we've been talking about Donald Trump. But let's talk about the presidential preference primary, March 22nd. But it's not a primary. It's a preferential election.
Well, technically, it is kind of like a primary. I mean, there is the delegates don't get directly selected at that. But the at least in the Democratic Party, if you get a certain percentage of vote in that preference vote, then delegates are later picked at a caucus later. But it's proportional to the vote. Let's say Hillary Clinton gets 60%, Bernie Sanders 40%, then Hillary gets 60% of the delegates to the convention.
Well, except if Hillary has more superdelegates from Arizona, then she'll get a greater number.
That excludes superdelegates, yeah. So superdelegates are elected officials and people that get a seat at the convention.
Now, today is the deadline is tonight.
Deadline's tonight at midnight to register either as a Republican, a Democrat, or a Green a party person. And if you do have your registration in, you can vote for one of those three candidates, one of those three parties in the PPE. The Republicans will do this as a winner-take-all, and then we will have our state convention to select delegates April 30th in Phoenix. And when that happens, we'll split those delegates by congressional district, as we normally do, and then there'll be at-large delegates that'll make up the field. And we are a winner-take-all primary here in Arizona.
And independents, they cannot participate in this.
They can. They just would have to decide if they wanted to register as a Republican, a Democrat, or a Green Party person.
They can't pick it like they can in a regular election cycle where they can pick either party in the primary to vote in. I guess by rules that the legislature passed, you have to actually be a Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary. preference vote, as well as a Republican and a Republican.
Yeah, and that's what we saw in South Carolina over the weekend. Independents were able to select which party they were going to vote for in their primary election. And there were a number of independents who, if you will, crossed lines to vote for Donald Trump, not as many for, you know, for the others, but they did cross lines to vote for Trump.
So if you're an independent, you want to and want to vote in that presidential preference vote, either in the Democratic primary or the Republican primary, you need to go in and change your registration to either Democrat or Republican, depending on what primary you want to vote in.
And you do so by at Service Arizona.
ServiceArizona.com, or you could do it at the recorder's office. But I think Service Arizona at this point in time is probably the best way to go.
You know, Bernie, so many young people, Paul Eckerstrom, mm-hmm. and are so-called feeling the burn about Bernie Sanders. And these are people that have not probably been engaged in politics before. They're young people. Maybe this would be their first time to vote. You could see a case where they would be very disenchanted if their guy doesn't get the nomination and perhaps stay home. That would be a big fear for the Democrats.
Yeah, I think on the Republican side, a lot of new voters are coming in for Trump as well. That happens. I think let's say Hillary wins this nomination. She has moved on some of those issues that Bernie's talking about and hopefully can make sure and keep those voters engaged. That's a challenge, and she would have to really work at that, I think, to keep make sure they go out and vote. But, you know, once they're engaged, I think, in any primary, a lot of times voters then start to stay being voters. And I think that's what's important about this, is that the more participation you get in this process, then hopefully that this carries over for the rest of their life, actually. And, you know, I think Bernie's doing very well with younger voters because, even though he's an older man, is because
they're both old.
He's got ideological proposals that, like students right now, are coming out with huge debt out of college. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we should be doing something about that. Well, Bernie's got a strong proposal that state colleges should
stuff.
Be free.
Should be free. Stuff.
And like it is through high school. At one point, you know, you couldn't necessarily go to high school in this country without paying a lot of money. Well, that changed in the 20th century where you could go through high school for free. Well, you know,
that's not free. You pay taxes for it.
Well, you pay taxes for it. Everybody pays
Nothing's free, Paul. Somebody's paying for it.
But a student coming out of college.
Therein lies the true fallacy of the Democratic Party.
It shouldn't have a huge debt burden to when they first start out in their career. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of younger people saying, yeah, I'm for Bernie Sanders.
When is the Republican convention, Bruce?
RNC convention is in Cleveland. Uh-huh. It begins July 18th, which is a big change for the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. The previous conventions being roughly, you know, the last several cycles around Labor Day, essentially because there was no nominee who'd been named by the party, our nominee could not get dollars, flowing for him or her for the general election until we nominated him. So we'll actually name that nominee on the 21st of July and then go to the races after that. The Democratic convention is after ours.
Yeah. I actually don't know the exact date right now.
Oh, for a moment there, I thought you said after hours, like after late night or something. Yeah. No, there.
Sometimes they go late.
Yeah,
night.
Late after hours. Anyway, this could be the first open convention in what, 30 years, not on a first ballot.
Well, it's possible. I think the last one was actually in 1952,
mm-hmm. with Eisenhower,
and maybe 48. But all of the people, mm-hmm. all the people who participated there, are long since gone. We don't do; neither party really does conventions that are open anymore. And all the campaigns are beginning to develop what they call second ballot strategies. Republicans would have a difficult time being swayed by what a candidate says they should do or not do. You know, so let's say candidate A wins the winner-take-all, mm-hmm. and candidate B is the prevailing party once we get to the convention. Republicans in Arizona don't easily give up their votes, and I doubt if they would do so under those circumstances.
Well, this is for a political scientist looking at this. This would be very unusual because since rules were changed in both parties to be more vote-based delegates rather than delegates controlled by party leaders, open conventions are just a thing of the past. But in the Democratic Party, it's not going to happen because you just got a one-on-one between Bernie Sanders and Clinton, and one of them is going to get to a majority before the convention, presumably, and then they'll be picked on the first ballot because delegates have to vote their candidate the first ballot. It's after the first ballot that he can stray and move to somebody else. What the Republican seems to be lining up as is seems to be almost a potential that nobody's going to get a majority going in on the first ballot because there's three strong candidates at this point, or we got mm-hmm. four, I think, still with Kasich. But there's three, what looks like developing three strong candidates. And if they keep separating out the delegates kind of a third, a third, a third, or something in similar to that, there's a chance that there'll be an open convention and it'll have to go to a second ballot, and then who knows what'll happen.
Well, we're going to have to take it right there and leave it right there on the Political Face-Off brought to you by Moe's Gallery. Gentlemen, thank you very much, Bruce Ash and Paul Eckerstrom. Moe's is the place for all of your framing needs. Been going to Moe for many, many years, really after moving back to Tucson almost 30 years ago. So I strongly recommend Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge on Facebook and moesgallery.com. We will be right back.
Honey, welcome home. How was your trip to L.A.?
Flying out of Tucson was the way to go. I got 3 whole days of FaceTime with the board, and they liked the fact that I saved the company time and money by flying out of TIA.
Oh, honey, that's great. Sounds like your career is really taking off.
You bet. With so many daily flights to L.A., I can get there in no time at all.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antique, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by my friends over at Green Things, one of our newest sponsors to the Buckmaster Show. If you're into gardening, I love to garden. I love the roses that I get at Green Things. Green Things is, they've expanded. They were on 4 acres. They've pushed it now to 13 acres over there on River, 3384 East River. It's just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Go to greenthingsaz.com. And if you're looking for all of your spring and summer gardening supplies and flowers, they've got 33 greenhouses full of flowers. So there'll be no problem finding what you need at Green Things. Dr. William Hartman is a senior scientist and co-founder of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute. He is the recipient of the first Carl Sagan Medal given by the American Astronomical Society for the popular presentation of scholarly research. Dr. Hartman has had an amazing career that is continuing very strong to this day. That career includes, along with Planetary Science Institute co-founder Don Davis, development in the 1970s of the giant impact hypotheses for the formation of the moon. Their theory shows our moon was formed from the debris from a giant impact that resulted when a large asteroid crashed into Earth. We'll be talking a little bit more in detail about that during the half hour. Bill Hartman is, I think, a true Renaissance man. He is a critically acclaimed painter. Beautiful work Bill does. He is a historian and novelist. His previous books include Desert Heat and the novel Cities of Gold. His newest book, which is now out in paperback, is titled Searching for Golden Empires, Epic Cultural Collisions in the 16th Century America, published by UA Press.
Yes.
The book is getting wonderful reviews, including a starred review in Publishers Weekly, which calls the book a top pick. And not only that, Dr. Bill Hartman is featured on the cover of a new book, a young Bill Hartman. The book is written by Melissa Sevenet. Melissa is a NPR reporter up in Flagstaff, covers science, and we'll have her on at a later date. But the name of the book is Under Desert Skies, How Tucson Mapped the Way to the Moon and Planets. That is also published by the University of Arizona Press. Bill, good to see you.
Hi. It's great to be on your show.
So, this book, really, people often wonder, how did Tucson become the astronomy capital of North America? And some may even argue, like, the astronomy capital of the world. A lot of that goes back to the early 60s, doesn't it? And what happened at the University of Arizona.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, Arizona has long been seen as a great place for astronomy because we have desert skies, we have a very good observing conditions. And so even back in 1900, Percival Lowell was here and he was building Lowell Observatory up in Flagstaff. But in the 60s, right around 1960, Gerard Kuiper was one of the very few, maybe two or three astronomers, who was interested in the moon and the planets. And he had been at the University of Chicago and he had an offer to come out here to the University of Arizona at that time, NASA was and the National Science Foundation were throwing money into picking about 10 universities, I think, for special grants to convert sort of grade B-plus universities into grade A research universities. And that was a big movement in the 60s. And so Kuiper came out here and had a chance to build pretty much his own big laboratory building. So we still have that Gerard P. Kuiper building, Lunar and Planetary Lab, on campus. And started from there.
Well, so many times in life, Bill, as you know, it's being at the right place at the right time. And when you think about it, the early 60s, we were just really, you know, you had Sputnik, and the Russians had really cranked up their space program, and the United States basically had to play a little catch-up, and this was suddenly something that became a top priority, and here's the University of Arizona suddenly with this lunar and planetary laboratory positioned beautifully.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and I remember even as a teenager, you know, we 14-year-old kids knew that somehow space travel was going to happen, you know, back in the 50s, and all the adults thought this was crazy, but then the Russians launched the first Sputnik, and that was really traumatic. I was a physics student at Penn State at that time, and I remember the headlines, and lots of money was poured into science and math and so forth. So U of A was just perfectly positioned, just as you say, and it was the place that I applied to because I wanted to. I thought planets and moon were very exciting, you know, and what would it be like to be on these other worlds?
But the astronomy community at that time hadn't really jumped on board.
That's right, because, I mean, traditional astronomy had become oriented towards stars and galaxies and the very distant objects of the universe. So there was always a joke in astronomy that the moon was just a very nuisance object that got in the way and put all this extra light into the sky so that the astronomers couldn't see distant galaxies and so forth.
So you arrived in the early summer of 1961, and on the cover, there is this photo on the cover of Under Desert Skies, How Tucson Mapped the Way to the Moon and Planet. There's a picture of you working on a project. What was that project?
It's an odd photograph, and I was very surprised to see it on the cover of this book in the University of Arizona Press catalog. The project was set up by Kuiper. There were several temporary buildings on the campus at that time shaped kind of like long Quonset huts. And Kuiper had set up a big white hemisphere at one end of a long hallway, one of these long buildings, and at the other end a projector. And he had collected the very best photographs, highest resolution photographs of the moon from big telescopes all over the world. So the idea was to project the moon, the image of the moon, onto the globe, and now you could walk around to the side of the globe. Now you got to remember that the moon always keeps one face toward the Earth. So if I look right at your face, I can see your ear on one side, but it's a little hard to tell what it really looks like. But now we had this image on the globe, and we could walk around to the side of the globe and see what that funny shape was over on this side or that side, that edge of the moon, as seen from the Earth. And of course, nobody had been around the moon yet.
No, so. But all of this would become just so critical, this information of what was going on at the University of Arizona in the 60s for the Apollo missions and eventually putting a human being on the moon.
That's right, because Kuiper was getting support to produce this atlas of the moon. My job was to take photographs of that globe from different positions overhead of the phenomena, the features on the moon. So a certain crater that's over there on the edge of the moon, we can only see it foreshortened from the Earth. Now we could photograph it the way it would look to an astronaut. So there was a huge effort to find out what the detailed surface features were going to be like. Could people land on the moon? A spacecraft land without sinking into lunar dust and so forth. All of those kinds of issues. That whole decade of the 60s was, you know, very exciting because, you know, I felt like I was part of a big national program, and I'd go outside after classes and wandering across the campus and look up, and there was the moon, and I thought, gee, it's only going to go around 60 more times before we try to land on it.
Well, within months after arriving and working with Kuiper,
yeah.
You discovered a huge impact formation on the eastern edge of the moon that had never been recognized before, and you actually co-authored, didn't you?
Yes.
Wasn't it Hartman and Kuiper, the discovery of this 600-mile-wide,
yeah.
What is the correct name of the impact
basin? The Orientale Basin.
Like for Eastern Basin.
Orientale was the way it was. I guess that was Latin. But one day we came in and I was photographing the globe, the hemisphere, and there was this amazing feature, these rings kind of sticking out from the backside of the moon, which of course we could never see, but we could see part of this ring system, and I realized, having read books about the science of the moon, that this was a very important feature because it looked kind of like the bullseye pattern you get if you shoot a BB gun through glass or something, and there's kind of concentric fractures mm-hmm. and then radial fractures. So I took the pictures into Kuiper, and he was very gracious. I mean, here I was a first-year graduate student, and he agreed with me that this was important. And as I say, he was gracious and let me be the first author on the paper.
Yeah, what a thrill for a young person like you to have your name on that right away.
In the first year, yeah.
Well, there are new clues on the perplexing origin of the moon, and who better to talk about it than Dr. William Hartman as we continue on the Buckmaster Show after the break. We'll get into that and other things with Bill Hartman.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman. I've got one wife, five kids, two grandchildren, and I'm afraid I live in a place where some of those scorpions get in the house, and I'm here to report one of the smartest calls I ever made was to my friend Shelby Hawkins at Five Star Termite and Pest Control. Guess what? The only scorpion the Lehmans ever see is a dead one. Call.
We're Five Star Pest Control, and we know what bugs you.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions work together to deliver regional transportation improvements that are funded by the RTA's 20-year plan. So far, more than 700 transportation improvements have been completed, like enhanced transit services, new bike lanes and sidewalks, expanded roadways, and new traffic signal technologies. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. Business owners and managers, upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amori's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amori is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Tuesday as we talk with Steve Christie, Pima County Supervisorial Candidate, plus Dan Gibson of Visit Tucson. It's all happening on Buckmaster, noon to 1 on Tucson's Voice AM 1030 KVOI. We have live streaming, podcasts, and our show archive on my website, buckmastershow.com. The Buckmaster Show. This portion is presented by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. That is a beautiful part of the southwestern United States and of New Mexico. Grant County, it's a historic area, and of course there's the Gila National Wilderness, which was America's first national wilderness, and then early in the 20th century, becoming a national monument, was the world-famous Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. If you have not seen that, it's a lovely drive, maybe 45 minutes to an hour on a really beautiful road, maybe not even that long, just north of Silver City. And it's only 3 hours east of Tucson. Great places to stay in the area, like Pinos Altos Cabins and Little Toad Creek Inn. You can find the full listing of places to stay and the many things to do at southwestnewmexico.org. Dr. William Hartman is with us, senior scientist, co-founder of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute. His current book is Searching for Golden Empires, Epic Cultural Collisions in the 16th Century America, published by the University of Arizona Press. And speaking of that part of New Mexico, Bill, you know that area pretty darn well, don't you, in your search for the Coronado Trail?
Yeah, there's real evidence now in the last 10 years or so that the Coronado Expedition in 1540 did come up through the southeast corner of Arizona. There's been some artifactual material found from that period. And they apparently came up the San Pedro and across the Chiricahuas and into New Mexico, over there toward Silver City, mm-hmm. and then kind of up the New Mexico-Arizona border and into Zuni, New Mexico, which was Cibola, the seven cities of Cibola.
And you have found artifacts along the way, you or your colleagues have?
Yeah, colleagues. And my wife Gail and I were involved in a canyon in Texas where artifacts were being found. So we actually helped in excavating some particular artifacts that are related to Coronado, where part of the Coronado expedition. These are little copper crossbow points. They look kind of like the tip end of a ballpoint pen. And dozens of those were coming out of this one canyon, which fits a description in the old chronicles of the expedition, that they were in some canyon out there and a big hailstorm came up and broke all their crockery around the campfire.
Well, when you think about it, Bill Hartman, we were talking about the moon in our first segment. This expedition was about as foreign to those people in that day as us going to the moon.
It really was. Good comment, because it was the Apollo expedition of the Western Hemisphere at that time. There were 2,000 people approximately. There were cows and sheep and horses, and the largest number of people were actually Native American allies from the Mexico City area after Cortez had conquered the Aztecs. So the book that I did with U of A Press is covers that whole period from Cortez's conquest and meeting Montezuma and fighting their way out of Mexico City. I mean, every page of those chronicles of that period has some exciting story.
All that Mexico City stuff. Yeah, I remember from your book. I had a first edition of your book, and I couldn't put it down because just
thank you,
them getting out, the Spaniards getting out of Mexico City, running, literally running for their lives.
Yes, yes, at midnight.
As the causeway was, you know, you can see it just crumbling behind them, and they're like just getting away.
That's right. Aztecs were coming out in their canoes, you know, along the causeway out of the city. But, you know, all of that is linked in my mind in terms of exploration and just human exploration. So,
and that's what fascinates you, exploration.
Having been interested in getting to other planets, you know, then I thought, well, it's really exciting to see what it was like in the 1500s.
So I want to go back to the 1970s, your giant impact hypotheses for the formation of the moon. And there continue to be stories coming out. This one was in the Washington Post. Scientists pretty sure that the moon formed when a smaller planet, probably about the size of Mars, collided with a young Earth. So a lot of this is what you'd been saying for many decades now.
Yeah, Don.
That the Earth is a composite of two planets.
Yes, yes. Don Davis and I, we were two of the first people at the Planetary Science Institute here in Tucson. And in 1974, we wrote a paper to that effect that we were realizing, you know, you and I just talked about this big impact on the moon that Kuiper and I found in 1962. And that really put me onto the idea that there could have been big collisions. And all during that period, Most of the astronomers working in that area pictured more like a big planet is growing and then all these little pea-sized objects are coming in and making it bigger and bigger and bigger. But the reality is, what we see in the asteroid belt today, you have one biggest asteroid is 1,000 kilometers, but the next biggest one is 400 or 500 kilometers, and there's a couple of those, and then there's dozens of 100-kilometer size many, many smaller ones. So the same thing applied in the early solar system, and Don and I wrote a paper. Don did a lot of the calculations on the dynamics of this, of whether an object, a second largest object, could get big enough to do the job. And what the job was that this second largest body would hit the Earth and blow the rocky material off the outer layers of the Earth. And all the iron in the Earth would be hidden in the center because the Earth has this iron core. So the material that mostly gets blown off into orbit is rocky stuff. And that's what the moon's made out of. And one of the big mysteries was that the moon does not have this big iron core like the other planets. So nobody had been able to figure out how could the moon possibly grow near the Earth without getting the iron. So that's what our theory was about.
Well, we have a caller here to the Buckmaster Show. Caller,
great.
Would like to ask Bill Hartman a question. Bill, if you'd just slip that headset on so you'll be able to hear Philip. Go ahead, Philip. You're with Dr. William Hartman.
Yes, if your theory of the origins of the moon are correct, could that give any credence to the theory of abiotic origins of oil, that the organic layers on the original Earth were pushed down into the center of the Earth as that other planet was coming through, and then that's why we have all this organic material trapped deep underneath the layers of Earth.
Okay,
well,
thank you.
I think that geologists would say in general that there's not organic material all the way down into the deep interior of the Earth because it's just too hot. But you're right. There's buried material. In fact, I've read a few times that the if you take the total mass of living material on planet Earth, what we usually don't realize is most of it is underground. It's bacteria and so forth. Yeah. But that's just in the upper layers, and I think those layers get formed in the later geology of the Earth and not during these early impact events.
Good question, though, Philip.
Good
Thank
question,
you for a calling. Only got about a minute left. You wrote a book a few years ago, A Traveler's Guide to Mars. I think you're going to go down in history, Bill Hartman, as the first author of A Travel Guide to Mars. And have you changed your your mind at all about when we're actually going to put a human on there, a time frame?
Well, you know, I always say that it technically it could be done starting at any time now. I think we have the technology to begin to do it. So I think when people ask, when are we going to get there, my answer is it depends more on geopolitics than on the technology. And the Chinese have already announced that they're interested in putting humans in space and putting humans on the moon, maybe a lunar base. There was even some discussion from the Russians on that. So if they do it, then that will get our Congress all excited.
Then we'll have another space race again.
Exactly.
Bill Hartman, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Great.
Your book
here
is now available in paperback?
In paperback, and it's a press right here in Tucson, Arizona. So both of these books that we've talked about are coming out of Tucson.
Thank you, Bill. Coming up this afternoon for Tucson at 4 with Mike Shaw, we do 4 hours of local talk here, 6 to 10 in the morning, Wake Up Tucson, then the Daily Double, 8 to 9, and Sean's program from 9 to 10. Me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you for our Tuesday edition of the Buckmaster Show. We'll be speaking with Steve Christie. He is a Pima County supervisorial candidate. He'll be on the program tomorrow. Till then, on behalf of my producer, Ray Allen, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon.